Chapter 65. Cooked food from a stall on the plaza for a copper coin like one of themselves. At that moment, the notion of seeking Captain Mitchell passed through his mind. He glanced in the direction of the jetty and saw a small gleam of light in the O.S.S.N. Company's building. The thought of lighted windows was not attractive. Two lighted windows had decoyed him into the empty custom house, only to fall into the clutches of that doctor. No. He would not go near lighted windows again on that night. Captain Mitchell was there. And what could he be told? That doctor would worm it all out of him, as if he were a child. On the threshold he called out, "Giorgio!" in an undertone. Nobody answered. He stepped in. "Hola, Viejo. Are you there?" In the impenetrable darkness his head swam with the illusion that the obscurity of the kitchen was as vast as the placid gulf, and that the floor dipped forward like a sinking lighter. "La, Viejo," he repeated, falteringly, swaying where he stood. His hand, extended to steady himself, fell upon the table. Moving a step forward, he shifted it, and felt a box of matches under his fingers. He fancied he had heard a quiet sigh. He listened for a moment, holding his breath, then, with trembling hands, tried to strike a light. The tiny piece of wood flamed up quite blindingly at the end of his fingers, raised above his blinking eyes. A concentrated glare fell upon the lean and white head of old Giorgio against the black fireplace, showed him leaning forward in a chair in staring immobility, surrounded, overhung, by great masses of shadow, his legs crossed, his cheek in his hand, an empty pipe in the corner of his mouth. It seemed hours before he attempted to turn his face. At the very moment the match went out, and he disappeared, overwhelmed by the shadows, as if the walls and roof of the desolate house had collapsed upon his white head in ghostly silence. Nostromo heard him stir, and utter dispassionately the words, "It may have been a vision." "No," he said, softly. "It is no vision, old man." A strong chest voice asked in the dark, "Is that you I hear, Giovan Battista?" "Sigh, Viejo. Steady. Not so loud." After his release by Satillo, Giorgio Viola, attended to the very door by the good-natured engineer-in-chief, had re-entered his house, which he had been made to leave almost at the very moment of his wife's death. All was still. The lamp above was burning. He nearly called out to her by name, and the thought that no call from him would ever again evoke the answer of her voice made him drop heavily into the chair with a loud groan, wrung out by the pain, as of a keen blade piercing his breast. The rest of the night he made no sound. The darkness turned to gray, and on the colorless, clear, glassy dawn the jagged sierra stood out flat and opaque, as if cut out of paper. The enthusiastic and severe soul of Giorgio Viola, sailor, champion of oppressed humanity, enemy of kings, and, by the grace of Mrs. Gould, hotel keeper of the Sulaco Harbor, had descended into the open abyss of desolation amongst the shattered vestiges of his past. He remembered his wooing between two campaigns, a single short week in the season of gathering olives. Nothing approached the grave passion of that time but the deep, passionate sense of his bereavement. He discovered all the extent of his dependence upon the silenced voice of that woman. It was her voice that he missed. Abstracted, busy, lost in inward contemplation, he seldom looked at his wife in those later years. The thought of his girls was a matter of concern, not of consolation. It was her voice that he would miss. And he remembered the other child, the little boy who died at sea. Ah! A man would have been something to lean upon. And, alas! Even Guyan Battista, he of whom, and of Linda, his wife, had spoken to him so anxiously, before she dropped off into her last sleep on earth, he on whom as he had called aloud to save the children, just before she died even he was dead. And the old man, bent forward, his head in his hand, sat through the day in immobility and solitude. He never heard the brazen roar of the bells in town. When it ceased, the earthenware filter in the corner of the kitchen kept on its swift musical drip, drip into the great porous jar below. Towards sunset he got up, and with slow movements disappeared up the narrow staircase. His bulk filled it, and the rubbing of his shoulders made a small noise, as of a mouse running behind the plaster of a wall. While he remained up there, the house was as dumb as a grave. Then, with the same faint rubbing noise, he descended. He had to catch at the chairs and tables to regain his seat. He seized his pipe off the high mantle of the fireplace, but made no attempt to reach the tobacco, thrust it empty into the corner of his mouth, and sat down again in the same staring pose. The son of Pedrito's entry into Sulaco, the last son of Senor Hirsch's life, the first of decades' solitude on the Great Isabel, passed over the Albergo de la Luna on its way to the west. The tinkling drip, drip of the filter had ceased, the lamp upstairs had burned itself out, and the night beset Giorgio Viola and his dead wife with its obscurity and silence that seemed invincible till the Capitista cargadors, returning from the dead, put them to flight with the splutter and flare of a match. Sigh, Viejo. It is me. Wait. Nostromo, after barricading the door and closing the shutters carefully, groped upon a shelf for a candle, and lit it. Old Viola had risen. He followed with his eyes in the dark the sounds made by Nostromo. The light disclosed him standing without support, as if the mere presence of that man who was loyal, brave, incorruptible, who was all his son would have been, were enough for the support of his decaying strength. He extended his hand grasping the briarwood pipe, whose bowl was charred on the edge, and knitted his bushy eyebrows heavily at the light. You have returned, he said, with shaky dignity. H. Very well. He broke off. Nostromo, leaning back against the table, his arms folded on his breast, nodded at him slightly. You thought I was drowned. No. The best dog of the rich, of the aristocrats, of these fine men who can only talk and betray the people, is not dead yet. The Garibaldino, motionless, seemed to drink in the sound of the well-known voice. His head moved slightly once, as if in sign of approval, but Nostromo saw clearly that the old man understood nothing of the words. There was no one to understand. No one he could take into the confidence of Decatur's fate, of his own, into the secret of the silver. That doctor was an enemy of the people, a tempter. Old Giorgio's heavy frame shook from head to foot with the effort to overcome his emotion at the sight of that man, who had shared the intimacies of his domestic life, as though he had been a grown-up son. She believed Jan would return, he said, solemnly. Nostromo raised his head. She was a wise woman. How could I fail to come back? He finished the thought mentally. Since he has prophesied for me an end of poverty, misery, and starvation. These words of Teresa's anger, from the circumstances in which they had been uttered, like the cry of a soul prevented from making its peace with God, stirred the obscure superstition of personal fortune from which even the greatest genius amongst men of adventure and action is seldom free. They reigned over Nostromo's mind with the force of a potent malediction. And what a curse it was that which her words had laid upon him. He had been orphaned so young that he could remember no other woman whom he called mother. Henceforth there would be no enterprise in which he would not fail. The spell was working already. Death itself would elude him now. He said violently, come, Viejo. Get me something to eat. I am hungry. Sangre de Dios. The emptiness of my belly makes me lightheaded. With his chin dropped again upon his bare breast above his folded arms, barefooted, watching from under a gloomy brow the movements of old Viola foraging amongst the cupboards, he seemed as if indeed fallen under a curse, a ruined and sinister Capitis. Old Viola walked out of a dark corner, and, without a word, emptied upon the table out of his hollowed palms a few dry crusts of bread and half a raw onion. While the capitalist began to devour this beggar's fare, taking up with stony-eyed voracity piece after piece lying by his side, the Garibaldino went off, and squatting down in another corner filled an earthenware mug with red wine out of a wicker-covered demijohn. With a familiar gesture, as when serving customers in the café, he had thrust his pipe between his teeth, to have his hands free. The capitalist drank greedily. A slight flush deepened the bronze of his cheek. Before him, Viola, with a turn of his white and massive head towards the staircase, took his empty pipe out of his mouth, and pronounced slowly, "After the shot was fired down here, which killed her as surely as if the bullet had struck her oppressed heart, she called upon you to save the children. Upon you, Guy and Batista." The capitalist looked up. "Did she do that, Padron? To save the children? They are with the English Senora, their rich benefactress. Hey, old man of the people, thy benefactress. Dot, I am old," muttered Giorgio Viola. An Englishwoman was allowed to give a bed to Garibaldi lying wounded in prison. The greatest man that ever lived. A man of the people, to a sailor. I may let another keep a roof over my head. S.I. Dot, dot, I am old. I may let her. Life lasts too long sometimes. And she herself may not have a roof over her head before many days are out, unless I dot dot what do you say? Am I to keep a roof over her head? Am I to try and save all the blancos together with her? You shall do it, said old Viola in a strong voice. Who shall do it as my son would have? Dot dot thy son, Viejo. Dot 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 there never has been a man like thy son. Ha, I must try. Dot dot dot, but what if it were only a part of the curse to lure me on? Dot dot dot, and so she called upon me to save, and then, she spoke no more. The heroic follower of Garibaldi, at the thought of the eternal stillness, and silence fallen upon the shrouded form stretched out on the bed upstairs, averted his face, and raised his hand to his furrowed brow. As she was dead, before I could seize her hands, he stammered out, pitifully. Before the wide eyes of the capitalist, staring at the doorway of the dark staircase, floated the shape of the great Isabel, like a strange ship in distress, freighted with enormous wealth and the solitary life of a man. It was impossible for him to do anything. He could only hold his tongue, since there was no one to trust. The treasure would be lost, probably unless Decad. Dot dot dot, and his thought came abruptly to an end. He perceived that he could not imagine in the least what Decad was likely to do. Old Viola had not stirred, and the motionless capitalist dropped his long, soft eyelashes, which gave to the upper part of his fierce, black-whiskered face a touch of feminine ingenuousness. The silence had lasted for a long time. God rest her soul, he murmured, gloomily. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.